October, yeah, October, okay. Yeah, early October 2013.
13.
Yeah.
We were back east there on a trip there, both for our 40th wedding anniversary, and also I had a graduate school reunion.
Oh, yeah, really?
Back end of September and first week, the first couple of weeks of October. We went back to Maine and Nova Scotia, and then by school there in New Hampshire. And but no, I remember there was something that took us out of town where we didn't make it. And
yeah.
No, it was I know, a wonderful evening, and
it was great, and
everyone enjoyed.
For the previous 4 years before that, I had been one of the lead people with Pacific talking to Victor as he was
leading up to
his idea of archives is very different than archivists.
Okay.
So archivists usually, when somebody says I'm giving you my archives, a truck pulls up and delivers everything.
Okay.
Victor, on the other hand, had us come down to his office and gave us one box at a time. And so I went for the first 5 or 6 times because I knew the questions to ask him.
Okay.
He'd want to tell stories.
Yeah, he liked, yeah, that was.
And I'll ask you about this. I was talking to David about this too. You know, his stories become locked in stone. They're word for word the same.
Are they? Yeah.
And so
heard them repeated.
I would be there and kind of knock them off of that and get interesting things. But so that was happening for several years. Then we had the big thing at Pacific in October 2013.
Okay.
And a couple of weeks later, we went over to his house, the librarians who were in charge of the thing.
Yeah, okay.
And he asked me to write his biography.
At that time, okay. Yeah. Because but you had gotten to know him through these you guys would have.
And so that's when he asked me. So I was able to interview him 4 times before he died.
Okay.
Officially with this fancy recorder.
Yeah.
And then I've been on sabbatical since the end of January this year.
Okay.
And so
been able to really concentrate.
The 55th person I've talked to.
Okay. Well.
So it's really 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 fun.
But you were out for another visit with Tom on Tuesday, I think,
when Tom,
I called him.
When I opened up my recorder, I still had grass in it because of we were sitting down on the grass.
Okay. The beautiful location up there on the
We
were out his place there in Newburgh and up along the hillside.
Well, but it's striking because up the hill in the back of his house you can see Mount Hood.
Yeah.
And I interviewed your brother Bob, and you sit in his living room and look out at Mount Hood.
Yeah.
They're just on different ridges.
Yeah, you're on quite a different spots there. Well, for Bob, he's the mountains are kind of his second home, or maybe his first home, really.
Yeah.
And West Lynn is maybe the second home with all the mountain climbing and hiking he's done over the years.
Yeah.
So that's been his great love in life to do that. And I know Bob, he had some good experiences when he served, I think, as a driver for Vic,
driver.
And taking in. I think it was something that came to him at the right time, and it was a good eye opener and matured
told him. Politics is not what he wants to do.
Yeah. Well, I think Vic convinced pretty much the whole family of that. So none of us were lining up to follow him. So
I was. It was striking me when I was talking to David.
Or Tom,
or
Bob,
to Tom.
I know.
When I'm
it gets
to
there's
your father. I say Ed,
Richard.
Bob, oh man,
you need actually, a whole family tree to keep us all.
I got the family tree that somebody back in Beirut did.
Yeah,
and
of all the men.
It's remarkable how all the names are exactly.
Yeah,
how
the names just keep repeating.
It's like,
how the names just keep repeating
this
throughout.
Is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, because my cousin, George, Richard's son, well, his first son he named, Aziz, which, at the time here, and, this is back, let's see, maybe 40 years ago, it was like, but then that was, named after George's brother, or the original Aatia with the name of the company.
Exactly.
So,
But it struck me, looking at how this business is now going into the fourth generation, which is just stunning. And yet politics has not caught on. The rug business, and then people who, in the generations, they do all sorts of other things. But no one else has really gotten.
Although I think one thing that's been common, is the fact of the community and civic involvement.
Exactly.
And I think if you look at the politics, from Vic's end is just one part of that, because, their dad and mom were so active, And I know my brother Bob, he asked Dad, in fact, just I think the last year, he said, what was it? Because all of you were engaged in the community, and really, as far as the number of things that Richard and Dad did, was right there with, a lot. I mean, Vic got on all sorts of boards and this and that, but as far as what, what the other two did, and he said, well, what, you know, what was it that must have been within your family that was an example or instilled you to get involved with the you know, community? And and Dad said, he said it was their mother as much as their father, that she volunteered for all kinds of things, and I know during the war, I think with the Red Cross, and but she was very engaged, and I know Grandfather, you know, was as well, reading, you know, back on him, that he you know, felt being part of the community was, you know, the essence of being here in America and contributing, and I think somehow this definitely came across to all three of them, and it came across, you know, to us, because, you know, we saw them being involved and doing things, and and then they, you know, nudged us a little bit along as we started our business careers, and you know, most of us started outside of the business, and most of us, you know, I came back, most of them drifted, you know, their own directions and did things, but I think in the end it's something that's been a value that you know, we've all carried forward as much as possible, and it felt, you know, is important, and you find that the, you know, personal rewards and satisfactions that come out of it are, you know, tremendous, but it's something that we try to, again, keep encouraging for, you know, Kevin's generation and others, and I know one of his, you know, second cousins is involved with the, you know, Salvation Army Board now, and and it's neat to see that. So I think if you think, again, of that politics as an extension of the whole the community involvement, you know, and that, but, you know, so I think everybody did, but what, you know, they enjoyed doing and where they found satisfaction from, and
Well, a point on that, Victor was actually almost, you know, as bitter as Vic gets, which is not very much. He was always somewhat mystified because with what he had done, what his two brothers had done, so active in the community, why didn't they get the recognition that, like, the NATO brothers got? You know, that kind of thing. And just saying, you know, we're doing just as much, and you know, it's fashion of the times. It's, I don't know what your dad was like, but, you know, Victor would never tell anybody.
I was going to say, they really never, it was just something that they felt that they did. I mean, they didn't do it to draw attention to themselves or the business. It was just something that they felt, you know, being a good citizen, going back, you know, the idea of being a good U.S. citizen and, you know, imparting those values, I think, from their parents. That encouraged them, and I think in, you know, in other cases, I mean, there's all these wonderful families in Portland, but sometimes the, you know, commercial scale of what they do is drawn, you know, attention along with their civic things and so forth. But no, I don't think that they ever did it for any personal recognition, and I don't think Vic ever felt that way either that I could see. I mean, he never seemed to change, you know, as we saw him within the family. It was just always Vic being Vic, or Dad being Dad, or Uncle Richard being the way he was, and they just went about their, you know, personal work and you know, work within the company and family, just as they did day in and day out. It was just the way things were. So none of us really thought much about it. So you didn't see that as something that they were trying to do for other reasons. It was just a, you know, a feeling of this is the right thing to do, or a way I can contribute or make a difference. And other than they, I think they've always, again, imparted that if you're going to get involved in something, then try to be in a role where you can make a difference with that organization or involvement, you know, or be a leader, you know, of that organization. And I think that part, you know, don't just be on it to be on it, you know, do something and be actively involved. And if that means eventually being the president of this group or that group, then, you know, that's the way you should go if that's possible. So I know with, you know, Dad, he was district governor. I mean, Rotary Club president, but then district governor, and Richard, you know, was head of the Rose Festival Association and the Lions, and we've had our roles here as well. So it's we've all tried to do those things, and I think the more we look back, that we find it was good, because you can get, you know, so absorbed in whether this business or your other career, and, you know, it's been a good balance, and it's healthy. You know, although I think when you start off younger on it, you're just sort of doing it to do it, and hopefully find some things that you enjoy, you know, being involved with.
Yeah, that's interesting. One of the chief prodders to get Vic to do something outside the business was his closest friend, Jim Campbell.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's issues about whether, you know, Vic would he have chosen to work in the company or not, you know, that kind of stuff. But Jim Campbell was saying, you know, whatever it is, you like muzzle-loading guns? Good, be a national level collector. Yeah. You like politics? Politics, but do something to get you more out of the store.
Yeah, I think, you know, Vic had a close circle of, you know, friends, you know, as well as within the family. Of, and I'd say Jim Campbell was probably right there as, you know, number one. There's a lot of other co-people like that I can think of, you know, Tom Galton and, you know, other people that he met along the way. But he and Jim had kind of a special, you know, relationship. And and when you talk about telling stories, you know, Vic always had a story or an example or a joke, but mostly it was in the form of a story.
Yeah.
And he and Jim would go back and forth all the time with, you know, you could just, you know, I could see some of that over the years, but they just, you know, just loved each other's company and loved poking at each other. And but I think there was, I think maybe Jim, you know, maybe was a factor in encouraging, you know, Vic, or you wonder, why did he go this direction or that direction? And I'm sure that, you know, Jim Campbell was part of it. I know he, you know, was with Vic the whole way through.
Right. Yeah.
Particularly, I can still remember, you know, when Vic was first elected governor, and the fellow that came out to introduce him was Jim Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the words that he used that night, and so those guys were linked at the hip, going back a lot of years together.
See, when Vic was governor, there was a priority of personal phone calls that could get through to him, depending on the height of the meetings. And Jim Campbell was.
Yeah, that's
Dolores was number three.
Was he?
Jim.
Wonder. Let's see who's two. Maybe the kids.
Yeah, but the kids don't really call like that.
But
it was basically
Jim. Jim were close to the fellow Alan Lane with the Lane Miles Standish publishing was, and just I think he enjoyed all the wide range of friendships that he had, but there was also a close group from growing up together that was there going back.
Well, and just the bond between the brothers, it's just amazing, And and finding out, there was your dad. Everybody loves your dad. You know, he's easygoing. I don't know if it helped that then he went and ran the cleaning business and wasn't around the store. Everybody loves him. I'm hearing stories that Richard and Vic had different personalities and sometimes butt heads. But whatever it was, they could then come together and make decisions.
Yeah.
And go on.
Yeah.
You know, family and business, it worked.
Dad's always advised us, he said, we never had a disagreement. And I kind of look at Dad and I go, I don't quite, remember it that way. I remember, hearing some arguments and this and that, but yet they always found a way. In other words, it was part of maybe talking things through, thinking things through, and I think there was maybe a confidence that they were always going to arrive at the right point together.
Yeah.
But it's like, in other words, and from that standpoint, there was that unity that was always there. But there was some the different personalities and different ideas, but I think the fact that I think originally, Richard, went over to start the clean plant.
Yeah.
Then Dad and then with Norm Parsons that had grown up around grandfather and was his caddy, for golfing. Yeah. And then ends up, being a partner and working with him all the years. So it's, I was, kind of just thinking back from, the Your first email was kind of memories and impressions about Vic, and as I said, the one thing was always just sort of he's just always the same. There's nothing different, and I can remember growing up as a kid, versus coming out of college or when he was a state representative or senator or governor or after he got out of office or family. It was just he was just always the same person, and I think there was a just a tremendous sense of self and awareness, and I've sometimes thought about it. My mom has said, well, kind of what a maybe calm, measured way that Vic had. Now, part of that may be he smoked a lot of cigarettes, to keep him that way. But then I was thinking back. Dad and I were just up at the cemetery on Tuesday, because Dad hadn't had a chance to get up there, earlier in July, and was kind of looking at the dates. You know, Vic was born, 1923, and then I think back, by 44, 43, when their dad, started having serious, health matters. So Vic's got to leave college at, 20 or 21, come up, okay, he's essentially, part of the company at that point. He gets married, and then his dad dies, and then Vic and Rich, not only get sent overseas, but are captured and missing. And yet I'm trying to think, if I was, 21 at that time, or 20 going 21, I've got a new wife, I've got a business, my mom's, she just lost her husband, two brothers, sons are missing, and you don't know what's going on, and how do you deal with that? And somehow he just, I think after that, maybe nothing was really as much of a, challenge or insurmountable when you think of all the things that he had to, deal with at that point. But I guess part of it was just his, upbringing, too. It's just, you just sort of dealt with what you had to deal with. But he certainly had some difficult maturing, circumstances early in his life. And I know, he spoke about, in the business, we said, how was it? Here's a group of experienced, Middle Eastern salespeople.
Right.
Again, it's not quite like sales is today. I mean, it's they're going after the customer. The times are tough during the war,
and one of your salesmen beat up the owner of another store.
I never quite. I've heard a lot of kind of shady, following other vehicles, around on calls, and people slamming doors in the office, and they wanted it, but I think. I remember Vic saying, well, the one thing that he did, I mean, he'd been around the business growing up. Mm-hmm. Grandfather, I know, brought all the brothers, down to spend, time working, mm-hmm. Working there. But he said he listened, and I think that was something, again, was that just Vic's personality or that he had to listen when he was 20, 21, not really, okay, he was the family, representative, okay, in charge, so to speak, but he knew that he didn't, have the knowledge and things, so he listened, carefully, and that's one characteristic that I think was always there. As I think back to our company board meetings or just other things as a family, that he was a, amazing, listener, and he also had an amazing way to kind of get right to the point, at hand, but. When he, the decision came or the process came, and he was just going to say that, and it was going to be, pretty clear at that point, and those things through, all the company board meetings and things that I, attended as we, got back into the early 80s. I'm a CPA by background, and so did that for nine years, and then, Vic was in office by 82.
Yeah.
As governor, and Uncle Rich was getting ready to retire, but Vic was still very much part of the business, and he would attend again. Yeah. All the board meetings were set around his schedule, and he was very actively involved in the company that way from still his ownership and wanting to know the major things that were taking place in the company, but
and also but leaving management to those active.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't meddle in, what was going on. I went back this morning and watched the video that's on our website that was done as part of the Oregon State, Family Business Program.
And
it's that one part that's early on where he said, that, he didn't want to, leave as governor and come back, to the business because I think he says he didn't want, uncles. Looking over your shoulder, that you have to learn, learn on your own, make your decisions, make your mistakes, and that was the way that there was a, fact, okay, if this is your responsibility, then you make the best of it. I'm not going to, question what you're, doing about, this or that at that detail level. I've got the confidence that you'll learn and grow and, here's the philosophy and the things that are generally important, and mm-hmm. so you can see how those things would translate into, running the state and the departments and
Again,
I've gotten
you just described the weekly meetings with all the managers, and you just described those meetings.
Things I have absolutely no firsthand experience and ever seen. I've heard about it, but his way I could see of doing things was no different than we saw within the the business there. And I know he told us in the board meetings that at one point his final decisions came as far as transferring ownership and. Mm-hmm. Family responsibilities. He said just be the best that you can in what you're doing. He said if you're running the gas station, he said then make it the best gas station that's out there. That was his exact, or if you're running, whatever, restaurant or something, just be the best that you can be at it.
Yeah.
He said that's what we're trying to do, and that was pretty much his whole summary of, what it was about. Whereas Uncle Richard was very detail conscious. I kind of laugh because I see more of Richard and Dad and myself as I go along over the years. But Richard, every rug had to be stacked up exactly a certain way. And
Tom described him as a neat freak.
Yeah, if something was out of order, he would just it also instilled that both from a retail standpoint or a service standpoint or professionalism and appearance, it's all those details are part of.
Yeah,
it's you can't just do some things okay and do other things one way. There needs to be a consistency if you're going to be a first class, business and operate in a first class, way. But, I never heard anything from Vic in that, regard. It was you knew that he was observing and paying attention to the same things, but I can never recall him talking about anything specifically.
Yeah, that makes sense.
As to how to run the store, how to do things.
Yeah, he was someone who had very high standards for himself and would do things, and I think he hoped people would notice.
Yeah, I think he just by setting that example.
Because also I don't know what it was like in the store at all, but in state government, same thing. You take personnel and basically say, do the best you can. Here's the parameters.
Yeah,
you're totally free within those parameters. Do it.
Yeah.
You make your hire people do it. Whatever it is, do it.
Yeah.
But he couldn't fire those people.
Yeah.
He wasn't very good at.
Yeah, I could maybe see that. Yeah.
This isn't working out.
Yeah.
And so he'd get frustrated. And sometimes they would get frustrated and figure it out and leave. But sometimes.
Yeah, I could maybe see that. So yeah, he'd be very loyal, and I think he. He obviously made a lot of good, decisions on, bringing people on. Again, the process that he followed, I don't know. I'm sure that when he met with people, he, there was a, I'm guessing, again, that he could maybe there's a relationship or something.
Absolutely.
That he sees
about
that individual, and, I'm sure that he recommended or vetted to a certain, point, but when it came to, appointing people, and again, he'd been in state government long enough that I think he did have either firsthand knowledge of many of the individuals or knew other people who would maybe know those, I'm sure, to draw upon. But
there's several crucial ones, though, that he doesn't have that.
Yeah.
And he meets with them for an hour and a half and then offers them, I want you to be my campaign manager.
Yeah.
Or Jerry Thompson.
Jerry.
She, to this day, doesn't have any idea why she was really hired.
Yeah.
And he saw something in her way earlier.
Yeah, and she was, the perfect balance to Vic. Because, again, we all had enough encounters with Jerry. I mean, it was, okay, what do you need? And wham, it's kind of, whereas Vic's sort of going along. And I think he saw, somebody that would maybe balance his... personality and approach and realize that he needed that. But I can see even around the store that there were probably, maybe instances where maybe a salesperson needed a little sharpening up or a little of that. And I don't necessarily see him, dealing with that other than he would have, again, told a story or just sat down and hoped that they would pick up on what he was trying to tell them, maybe rather than being, as direct. But when he would, in the years after he was his governor, people would approach him and say, I want to buy a rug or, get some carpet and, can you help me? So, again, Vic wouldn't, he would know enough. He could have brought him into the store and dealt with them personally. But he would call up, And if it was anything on the retail sales side, it would usually be to me, and he would just go, you know, David, you know, I just talked to Roger and Maggie Martin, and they want to do something down at the church. Mm-hmm. And he just said, you know, will you take care of them? Yeah. Okay, and that was the end of the conversation. Or you know, here's the nature of what it is. Here's the people. If you don't know who they are, I
right.
generally always knew who they were to begin with. And you know, here's what's you know needed. It was never, you know, give them a good deal or this or that. He just said, you know, will you take care of them?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, yeah, I'll take care of them. And,
yeah.
And then I would try to just let him know when things reached a certain, you know, point, you know, if we, it, you know, made the sale or we were getting ready to do the installation, just so in case, you know, I knew he would be seeing these mm-hmm. individuals so that he knew what was going on enough, you know, that he could say something,
yeah.
you know, to them back, that they wouldn't have to surprise, you know, him by saying, oh, yeah, we just finished getting this installed or delivered yeah. to our house, that he would know where things, you know, ended up. And but again, there was always that confidence that he had that he could just turn something over
mm-hmm.
to you and, you know, expect that you would, you know, carry through. And it's a good feeling, you know, mm-hmm. if you've worked for other people and, you know, again, where Dad and Richard would be, well, okay, so, you know, what's going on? What's going on with,
yeah.
you know, this?
Yeah.
And which, you know, which is fine that they,
yeah.
you know, Vic was, you know, much more of a hands-off, you know, type of manager and,
yeah.
and leader, but when you feel that that confidence has been instilled
mm-hmm.
in you, it's you know it's a great feeling working
mm-hmm.
with people like that, and because you sense it, and it's something that I've tried to you know to learn from that
mm-hmm.
you know let them go, you know, give them the broad scope and let them make you know those decisions, and don't tell them
mm-hmm.
it's not how to do everything, because otherwise you'll never see the creativity that they're going to. You'll bring themselves to a you know a task.
Yeah.
You know I'm kind of a more of a mix maybe of Dad and Richard on the detail, but there's that part of Vic that always says you know this is the you know the way to grow people. This is the
yeah.
way to you know do some of these bigger things. Is you have to you know step back and let you know let people show what they can do.
Yeah.
You know most of them are going to step up. Sometimes it doesn't work out. And,
right.
And then you have to make those decisions and or maybe shift roles or.
Maybe
make some other changes. Yeah, maybe make some other, maybe
yeah.
make some other changes. So
yeah.
it's been great, you know, having an uncle like Vic and
yeah.
You know, and a father and another uncle like Richard. Each of them, you know,
yeah.
imparted something, but still a tremendous, you know, consistency as to
right.
what they felt were the, you know, philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, behind the company and the philosophy from a family
yeah.
value, but again, it was just as much of an example of, you know, just. You know, not lecturing and just an example of how to do things.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a question for you.
How to be professional.
As you went to business school and then make the decision eventually to come back here, as you're going through and doing case studies and all those kinds of things, were you thinking of these three guys and the management that they had done? Becker and Atiyah Brothers?
Not so much at the time that,
mm-hmm.
you know, I
just 'cause they have
switched back to the
styles
business. Yeah, it's...
more of a family, more of a person.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I knew, you know, I guess I felt I knew each of them
yeah.
as much as I did, you know,
yeah.
growing up, so there, you know, was no surprise
yeah.
that way, and I worked, I guess it was about 6 summers in the business through college and
mm-hmm.
graduate school, and you know, while that was mostly over at the plant, Dad never really had me working for him. It was always working
yeah.
for Norm, or there'd be certain things that I'd be dealing with the, you know, store during the summer, you know, not
yeah.
as much, and so... you know, see Vic and Sarkis Manoogian, who was
yeah.
their partner on the retail side and
yeah.
With things. So, no, I didn't, you know, maybe again, you know, stepping back and in more recent years, I've kind of just thought of these types of things and how they did it, or that comment that, again, is in that video just
yeah.
hits me as soon as, you know, Vic said it that day. I'd heard things like that from him
yeah.
before, but I think it stirred my thoughts more at that point than let's say it did 30 years ago,
right.
you know,
right.
because now I've kind of been, you know, been through this process and I'm trying to do those
mm-hmm.
transitions with, you know, with Kevin and others in the, you know, company and, you know, then you remind as to what is important, that you can't
yeah.
look over their shoulders, that you have to give them those opportunities to learn and to grow. And
mm-hmm.
that's what we've been trying to do the last 5 or 6 years as we, you know, transition out of the company ourselves and,
yeah.
and to realize that we started this, you know, when I was 60 and then Richard's son-in-law, who was, you know, my partner
mm-hmm.
in business all these years, Tom Marantette,
mm-hmm.
and we just thought, you know, if people don't know what's going to happen to us, mm-hmm. you know, and our personal plans, then it just leaves a lot of uncertainty right. within the company. You know, we right. wanted to make things certain for the individuals here mm-hmm. that we're not going to be sitting here when we're 70, 75, 80 years old, like happens in a lot of mm-hmm. family companies. You know, things do have to transition
I'm
for
not
the
sure Warren Buffett's family complaints.
Well, no, we didn't have to worry about that on the Atea side, but it's. You know, but I think you know probably yeah. behind the scenes, Buffett's also got some
yeah.
strong people.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
They're ready to, you know, and they're running a lot of the, yeah. the show. But you know, I've seen so many companies over the years that owner or the family is there, and you literally reach a point. They're in their 80s and they're still making, you know, the crucial decisions. And so I mean, how can you grow? You know, unless the company is just growing phenomenally, if it's just even growing in within a normal range, you're not giving those younger people that are in their late 20s, 30s, early 40s a chance to grow and mature. So when something happens to you, you know, the business can have a chance. It's hard enough as it is to
yeah.
have continuity in the business, let alone if...
Yeah.
So Tom and I kind of started reducing our roles when we were 61, and...
Yeah.
You know, I'm 66 now. We've got a year and a half until this process is complete. We
right.
thought we'll step back, but just because of the age of some of our other senior
yeah.
managers and other individuals like Kevin, who are in their mid-30s up to early 40s, that, you know, things were not, you know, completely ready 5 or 6 years ago. But I think we'll be at that point, and we just, you know, hope then at that point that they're
yeah,
ready to go. But again, you got to do it, because the other side of it is not good, you know, either. And
yeah.
the only chance is to let those individuals grow. You know, it doesn't matter if it's family or non-family, that everybody in the company, you
yeah.
know, needs to grow and, you know, be able to step up and show things. So
yeah.
it remains a challenge, and that's what we've been working on for the past several years. So
do you know any of the details? When Vic took over, there was a manager that had been managing the company since George stepped back in 1940.
I don't know if that was who did, whether that's yeah Gwen Haas or Haddad or who. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't.
The,
I don't.
If this is in the minutes from your dad's history.
Okay.
If somebody's appointed.
Yeah.
Manager, but so I don't know if that person was consistent until 44. Did they stay on afterwards?
I don't, and I think there was an outside attorney who was, you know, involved, and I think
uh-huh.
even had different people float through as far as stock ownership, you know,
yeah,
around
yeah, it's very strange
time period, and,
yeah.
and who now, whether some of that, you know, was due to, you know, at the time that, you know, just part of the kind of legal requirements
yeah.
of, you know, with a corporation. I've never quite understood some of, you know, the other names I recognize, and because of, you know,
yeah.
connections, I think one of the calls, which was, you know, relative,
mm-hmm.
I think had some ownership, and
yeah.
you know, other individuals I think had, you know, legal roles in the company.
Yeah.
I think after grandfather passed away, but that, you know, whether some of that was connected, but I'd have to look back. But it seems like in that, you know, 1940s period up to when grandma passed away in 1950, yeah, there's these different people and ownership
well, and
things
also
that are kind of floating through.
There's a decision for Aziz and,
yeah.
and you guys to switch.
Right.
You know, ownership goes like
yeah.
this
yeah.
on that company and your company. So
right.
a lot of that.
Yeah. Stuff. Yeah. That took
yeah.
place. Yeah. He had moved, yeah, back when it was in the 20s, you know,
yeah.
back to New York. But I think.
But after,
yeah,
after his brother's death.
Death, then
like
I think
a
there's. Right.
3-4 year period of.
Yeah, transitions, and I think if
yeah.
I, you know, I've got those same documents
ownership.
That he still holds ownership in the Portland,
yeah.
you know, business, and things, yeah, start to transfer then at that point to,
yeah.
And then eventually, yeah, to Dad and Rich and Vic, and then Norm Parsons, and then a little bit later, Sarkis Manoogian
yeah.
come in as,
yeah.
into the picture, but, yeah, I know, you know, we've, you know, ownership-wise in the company now, we've got other, you know, senior managers that we've given an interest in ownership the
mm-hmm.
last several years, but some people outside the company go, well, gee, what are you doing? I go, you know, we've had, you know, this as much as I can go back in stock records to the 1920s.
Well, yeah.
And certainly the whole time I grew up, I never thought anything different that Norm Parsons was an equal partner in the clean plant, or Sarkis
yeah.
Manoogian had
yeah.
some interest in the retail operations, and later as we merged things, you know, together, and then they they retired, and so, you know, to me that's good, you know, for people who are long-term individuals. Mark McGurr, who's our company, you know, president now since I, you know, reduced my role, and you know, I've known Mark, gosh, 35 years now.
People work for this company.
Close to 40, yeah. But Mark joined us, I think, 19 years ago. But
wow.
You know, Mike, our general manager, I think, is 42, 43 years.
Yeah.
And if you had a minute, he was hired, you know, by Vic and Richard, and I think he's always got a couple good, you know, examples of, you know. You know, mm-hmm. him and his, I think, interview process or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, you know, but he's been more involved as far as actually working in the business day to day than, you know, than I have or Tom Marantette, you know, has been. And so, you know, with Mike and Mark and then Tom's brother Brian at the plant and then Jim Antonini, who just retired as a manager of our Eugene location. And but we gave each of these guys, you know, some stock a few years ago because we felt it was, you know, important and warranted. And, you know, the responsibilities that we were passing along to them that gave them the incentive. But the only comment I can remember, you know, from Vic, you know, that, you know, or at least maybe it was hearing from others in the family, is that Vic did have a hard time, you know, with the idea of selling some of the, and I maybe can see it, the Atiyah Brothers stock to Sarkis Manoogian. And that was always something that, even though I think it constituted only about 10% of the interest. Now, the cleaning plant, I never heard anything about, you know, Norm Parsons, you know, having an equal 25%, you know, because Vic, Rich, and Ed, but then Norm was the other 25%, you know, owner. And, but there was something maybe about that, you know, original company. I don't know what it was.
Well, that's looking at the history,
I don't know
they
what.
Gave, they had that a special class of stock that was for employees, and then they pulled it back after several years because nobody was buying it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So
there was a
they've done that,
little.
Those
yeah.
Kinds of,
there
they
was
tried a profit sharing.
Yeah.
And people didn't buy into that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can see why because clearly there's something with
it was
kind of the main stock and what do you do with these other things.
Yeah.
So,
but I think there was enough. You know, again, I never heard him directly say, but I know it was just something that was just.
Yeah.
I don't know. He would again trust it and had the confidence and in everyone.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, when it, you know, maybe came to the true idea of, you know, the ownership, or maybe seeing what had transpired with the ownership, is he, you know, had to assume certain responsibilities as a very young man. But you know, in the end, it all worked out well, and you know, it was going to be a process that was, you know, comfortable to him. So. But I think the other example, just, you know, personally, I can think of Vic's style is, you know, fishing. He loved to, you know, fish and do things. And I can recall sitting up at our, you know, family cabin and, you know, trying to tie a, you know, fly onto the line there. And I was probably, you know, just doing, make a knot, a couple more knots and hope it would hold together. And he would say, well, let me see what you're doing there. And he said, well, he said, here, you know, here's a way that I've done it, and showed me this little way to, you know, tie the fly on, and I imagine it's pretty much the standard way that most people do things. At the time, I was probably 10 years old and didn't know any other way than just tying knots, and he said, you know, so here it is, and here's the example, and I'll watch this, and I was sitting up at the cabin a couple of weeks ago, and out by the river, it's getting harder and harder to do it because I can't see that good anymore. I'm trying to get that line back through the loop there, and but I can't recall ever going out to fish with him, you know. But I can recall him showing me how to tie that knot, and I can remember him talking about how he would fish a stream, you know, the process that he would use it if he was fishing up a stream, how he would go about it. I actually go the opposite way, but I still was always thinking, you know, Vic always said he you know, he fished upstream. I always like going downstream and you know, with stuff. But, you know, he set an example, but then he left it to you. You know, he wasn't like, okay, you want to go out and fish, go out and fish, you know. I'm not your fishing buddy that way. Maybe he'd fish with Jim Campbell or you know, Alan Lane. I know he'd go out fishing with Alan and others, or who's the big guy, Smith, Bob Smith,
awesome.
You know,
yeah.
Over on the Deschutes,
yeah.
You know, but so, you know, Vic was saying, here, I'll teach you a little something, you know, and if you want to use it, fine. If you don't, you know, that's okay too.
Yeah.
So, But I think that was, again, just sort of part of his style,
yeah,
on things, to impart a few things and then just let you go and make your own way. And so, again, I think about those things a little bit more when I'm out on the river. Suzanne gave me a great, you know, picture, mm-hmm, here as they were cleaning out, you know, the house here a couple months ago, and it was a picture of Vic fishing on the Zigzag River by, mm-hmm, our cabin. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing maybe he's 10 years old. And it was right above, you know, his office, you know, door, yeah, there in the house on Fairmore. Yeah. And so she said, I'd like you to have it. And I said, you know, I'm taking it up to the cabin. And we put it up there 2 weeks ago, and I hung it above the door in one of the bedrooms there, on only bedroom on the main floor, mm-hmm, that actually Uncle Arif used to sleep in, who loved to fish. But I thought, there it is back above the door again. Mm-hmm. That's where Vic had it so many years, in his office here at home. And, you know, and that was always the fishing room that, so-called, so to speak, that Arif slept in, as the, you know, unmarried, you know, bachelor there,
yeah,
would come up with the family. And so I think that would just be our memory,
yeah,
you know, up there. But yeah, it's a nice, was a perfect little memento there that,
yeah,
I look forward to having. So
it's fabulous, you know, talking to your dad, because I was asking him about, you know, they've collected guns, but
yeah,
he didn't hunt.
Yeah,
the fishing.
Yeah, it's funny.
And your dad was pretty clear. He and Rich didn't do fishing.
Yeah, so
it's just fascinating to look at the family and see, wow,
yeah,
people do this, and then it goes to this generation over here, and
yeah,
somebody really likes it, and, you know, it's just fascinating to see the hopscotch.
Uncle Arif, who fished, and Vic, but that's why I grew up just tying knots, you know, on a tie and a fly, because Dad, like I said, he never fished.
Yeah.
He never showed me, so the only way I knew was just to kind of tie a bunch of knots and assume that the fly,
yeah,
would stay on there. And it's just all part. But no, those, you know, Vic, you know, you mentioned the guns. I can, mm-hmm, again recall, maybe, I don't think we could have been much more than 8 or 10, but he took us out to a rifle range there, but it was one of those big old muzzle loading,
yeah,
you know, rifles, and he wanted us to fire it, and I can still remember this day, you know. And so he went through, you know, here's how you would put the, I'm not a gun guy, but the, what, cloth patch or something,
yeah,
or the powder, or the whatever order they go in, and here's the ball, and you know, you do it. And he had it, he took us through it, had us do this, and then, you know, we fired at the target, and all I can remember is just getting my butt kicked, you know, and how much the darn thing hurt us. It just, you know, wham, and boy, I'll tell you that, because I, you know, again, Dad, I can never remember maybe firing a BB gun at the,
right,
cabin, but Dad didn't do guns.
Yeah.
Richard didn't, but Vic was the one that took each of us cousins, you know, out to the firing range,
oh, yeah,
so we could do that,
yeah,
you know, and it was just, yeah, yeah, little things like that, you know, growing up, and,
yeah,
you know, and I know he, yeah, he loved talking guns and his gun collection, but, yeah,
yeah,
I can never remember him hunting or hearing anything,
no,
about hunting ever.
Target shooting and
yeah, but
your dad explained, and then I found a lot of evidence that agrees with it. It's basically holding history.
Yeah, yeah, I think, yeah, every, yeah, there's
really
a good
big thing for him.
Yeah. Well, he loved history. I know that, because he collected, you know, you know far more than I, but whether it was the campaign buttons,
clocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The guns of Lewis and Clark. I'm,
yeah,
gonna say that we'll go look at the, you know, award,
yeah,
and other awards,
yeah,
here. But I know when, you know, this Lewis and Clark, centennial came,
yeah,
up, or what do you call it, bicentennial,
yeah,
or 2005, is that?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, so
yeah,
centennial.
Yeah.
So the Oregon Historical Society came to Vic,
yeah,
you know, because they knew that he had quite a collection of items, and they came and they borrowed, I think, for 6 months, the,
yeah,
you know, gold medal award that we had here. But, yeah, Vic was showing me, you know, some of this stuff that he,
yeah,
you know, he had, and I didn't, still don't probably realize, you know, even the 5 or 10% of all the different types of things that he collected. Yeah, he did. He loved history, and I think Tom was showing me again when,
mm-hmm,
went over to the house a couple months back, that they were found some coins. You know, they found, I'm trying to remember what the coins were from after the Civil War, but anyways,
mm-hmm,
a certain type of,
mm-hmm,
you know, coins that they had, and Vic, you know, had these in his drawer,
mm-hmm,
and you know, they're thinking, you know, what to do with them, and you know, but
amazing,
you know, all these things. But yeah, there was something about it that,
yeah,
that drew him to,
yeah,
yeah, that drew him to history. And I don't know, you know, I, Yeah, and maybe you found out. I don't know if he enjoyed reading, you know, reading history books.
Yeah,
I don't.
He had a rather extensive Civil War collection.
That I've heard about.
He loved reading about it.
Yeah.
But the hands-on.
Physically,
really
yeah.
Was something important to him.
Yeah.
When he went to the Middle East, and Asia, probably just all sorts of stuff.
I know.
Holland. One of his natural resources advisor was a woman named Madame Dale.
On one of his trips, governor, he brought this back and gave it to me.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, now they're pretty common. Pretty common. One of the fellows here has given me a much bigger one and it's even fancier inside. But Vic brought this back and gave it to me at some point. He'd have all these little knickknacks. I can remember coming back when he was
in Syria.
Governor.
He bought in a suit. He bought Scrimshaw that had American. Mid-19th century etchings on it.
Yeah.
And it turned out it was fake.
Okay.
But that didn't stop him at all. He displayed the stuff in his governor's office.
Yeah.
And I just got them in March.
Yeah.
And I did not put them in my carry-on baggage.
Okay.
So that would be too hard to explain. Ship them home. But the hands-on is really important.
Yeah, no, I can see that's always what...
Yeah.
You know, When he kept the office, you know, just up to, you know, recently downtown above the store, you know, the thing was, I know he loved to go out and he just used to like to walk around, you know, the streets there and he'd, you know, pop in at different stores and people would be surprised, you know, after he'd go, I saw the governor of Tia just walking down the street or he popped into my shop, but he just kind of liked browsing. Things, you know, he was, I think, a shopper, but he just loved, you know, what are people selling and what are they showing? And again, that attachment maybe to things. And I think, you know, again, he got to know all the people probably in the 2-3 block radius or if not more, you know, around there. And he'd love to, that was just his manner and method of relationships, you know.
At the state memorial service, I happened to sit with a group that had known Vic because Vic was on the board of the Lone Fir Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
So these are Chinese, American, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I interviewed one of them because, same thing, Vic in the 1940s and 50s, walking around the store at that point, Semler's Sporting Goods. There was a Chinese guy there who was into antique firearms.
Okay.
And they bonded.
Yeah, and see, and I think, and then that's
ever,
what,
ever.
Yeah.
And they were both immigrant families, so they had that as well. And,
yeah.
But
these relationships, and I think, well, you know, what was it? I don't think of him as, you know, not necessarily the fellow that, you know, just walks into a room and you just, you know, gravitate to him that way. You know, Mom has always said it was kind of funny because it was at a, you know, political gathering. Sometimes it was Dolores almost had to kind of push him into the, you know, action because he wasn't a glad hander that was, you know, going to run. But I think you find, and that's what I continue to hear. And certainly in all sorts of letters and other personal stories since Vic passed away, is that the personal relationships that he had, but then what was it based upon? You know, maybe it was like, you know, looking at something and then to get to talking, but once he latched onto those personal relationships, he never let go. It was a bond.
No.
It was a bond that was between him and other people that just went on, you know. And that's what I know he tremendously valued, you know, in the years after he got out of office, was those personal relationships, and he kept going back to Warm Springs. He kept, but say that shopkeeper or anybody else, and just the stories that have come in from people that said, you know, they met him once, but then he started talking about something that they found in common, and you know, just, you know, he had that somehow means of establishing that personal relationship that they still, even if it was just one or two encounters, it wasn't that they just met, you know, the governor while he was in office, or met him at a Boy Scouts thing. There was something personal that latched onto them that people have never let go of. And I found people at church, you know, that they've come up and, you know, said, you know this happened to me, or he came to our department, you know, while I worked in state government, and he, you know, we were getting anniversary awards, but he took the time to, you know, a little bit of time with each of us, and we found this in common, and you know, they realized that there was something more than him just showing up. There was something, and I think that was the way. It wasn't just something that you know it's 10 to 10:15 on your schedule and you show up and do this. That there was something, you know, more that he, I think, truly enjoyed, you know, doing.
He was also
truly enjoyed
keeping his schedule.
he
would personally engage with people, but he also, partly the people behind him kind of pushing him, but
yeah.
He was actually pretty good at keeping his schedule.
Yeah, he had.
Whereas,
no,
like,
Tom
McCall could be 2 hours late.
Yeah.
Just because
Vic, well, he's a business guy that I know. Yeah, Vic, I've seen him, you know. He'd write things down and have his notes there. To
he was governor, that he had a 3x5 card in his pocket.
Yeah.
We had every single one of them, so we could
do
tell
okay.
hour by hour what he
hour,
was doing.
See, what a, yeah, great. Yeah. Great record to have. Well, I didn't wear my short sleeve shirt today, just or you did, honor of it, but with the forecast, I don't own many. But
when Vic died last summer, Denny,
Denny was talking about all the short sleeve shirts
and,
that he.
And then Tom at one point said, "Don't worry, we've got that covered."
Well, Jim, would you like to go out
and
take a look at some of the awards and
that
things
here
that we have? And there's a little more water too, if you like it.
Hold on.